This is your typical radio ad while eating a Crunch Bar.
This is Automatic of Otto's Used Cars. This weekend only, we're having a whale! Bring the kids. See for yourself. It is huge. Gonna make a big splash. No other dealer can say they have a whale like this.
When things sound dull, turn up the fun with Crunch.
What does motion sound like? With Kizikans free shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
And welcome back to the Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
Team Godzilla, just here, chilling, ready to talk about MTG, MTG.
Are you Team Godzilla? I don't know. I feel like I'm old. I feel like
I'm going to be 100% honest with you. Warner Brothers sent me both shirts when they released the Blu-ray.
Oh, you're wearing a Godzilla shirt. I see now.
I have the team King Kong, Team Kong shirt also. They're, okay. You know, they fit okay. So I kept them around. I gave the toys to my niece and nephew. I use the bath towel sometimes to block my window because my shades are weird during summer when I need to have the AC running out the window.
Okay. You
know, I've put the whole package to good use.
Today we're talking about Magic the Gathering. For those who don't know, we're a Masters of Modern podcast. We talk about modern. We talk about regular magic. We have guests on that are great. We talk about stuff like this. Today we're going to be talking about the fact that Grixis Death Shadow is the best deck in the format, and it's not really close. And what does that mean? There was a PTQ qualifier or PTQ-esque qualifier over the weekend and a massive tournament. And there's a whole top 32 that we have available that we can kind of go over and talk about what are the most played cards. And also the fact that in the top four, the top four itself, we're all Grixis Death Shadow decks. So we'll talk about that in a second. before we get into that, make sure to please check out our Patreon. If you like content like this or you like this episode, we release literally the whole episode a week early, or like on Thursdays. We record on Wednesdays and the podcast released on Tuesdays, a whole week or almost a whole week early. You get the whole unedited version of the podcast. You get all of the little mistakes, all of the more deep dives that we think maybe aren't like meant to be in public eyes. You hear us swear, but you also get an extra bonus 20 minutes of content at the beginning of every episode where we talk about all kinds of stuff, including magic from Marvel movies. Today we talked about sandwiches and what the best fast food sandwich is. And if you want to hear about that conversation, our opinions on it, check that out. We also find out what Ben's Pokemon starter of choice from Gen 1 and Gen 9 would be. This is the type of content you get there. I maybe explained what Dragon Ball Z was to him at one point. So definitely check that out on Patreon. The type of
content you deserve.
You also, if you join the Patreon, get an access to the actual episode when it's fully edited, released a whole day early on Mondays versus Tuesdays, plus a bunch of other extra cool stuff. So definitely check that out. We also have all of the thanks and appreciation towards TCG Player, who, if you use our code below, you can get you can get us some benefits in the form of making this podcast happen into the future through sponsorship. And just if you want to buy anything on TCG Player, please just click through our page. And then that is also true for Alter Sleeves. So if you we have a whole little store with all the Alter Sleeves that we like, and then also are going to start coming out exclusive for patrons, exclusive MMCast Alter Sleeves as well in the near future. And if you check out the link below, you can go to altersleeves.com to check out, or just use the MMCast when you check out, and it helps us out as well. Last but not least, please hit that like and subscribe button. It is super appreciated. And as always, to get started, we are going to do a little game of trivia.
Ooh, I love some trivia. Sometimes I get them right. Occasionally.
Get those likes. And the way this works is I'm making a bet with all of y'all. And Ben, I'm going to ask Ben a trivia question. He's going to hit and ha for a second, giving all of y'all a chance to comment. You're going to comment your answer below. And then if you get it right, congratulations. We appreciate your viewership and you get a high five and I will like your post. If you get it wrong, though, you're going to have to hit that like and subscribe button. It's just the rules. You don't make them up if you can't get the answer correctly. Now, if you got it right and you want to hit like and subscribe, we're going to appreciate it. But for those who get it wrong, you're obligated. It is a legal contract that I'm making with you publicly right now, and you're just going to have to deal with it. All right, Ben, which card was banned that created the format that allowed Grixis Death Shadow to arrive as one of the best decks in the format in Modern?
A card that was banned that created Grixis Death Shadow.
Yes. Is credited with creating Grixis Death Shadow. So before it was banned, Death Shadow decks existed, but were not a big part of the metagame. And then this card was banned, thinking to have killed the deck, and it actually made it one of the best decks in the format.
I believe I know the answer to this question. I'm going to just give it. I'm going to hem and haw. I'll do it like a Schmodown match. You're sitting here. I'd be looking at you. You'd be looking at me and you'd be thinking, he knows this. He knows this answer, but he's just faking it. And there'd be 5, 4. How many repeats do I have? Oh, you're out. Okay. Gitaxian Probe?
That is correct. It is Gitaxian Probe. So
he knew it the whole time.
It's you know, the acting here is astounding. We should put you on a TV show. If you got that right, if you guessed Gitaxian Probe, thank you very much. If you hit that like button or subscribe button, we appreciate it. If not, you got to hit that like and subscribe button regardless. That's just the deal you made. It's not my fault you made that deal. It's your fault that like
and subscribe. The answer to the question of why did that happen and how did that happen, it's actually a very interesting story, and it's that the Gitaxian Probe combination with Grixis Death Shadow originally in the original versions of the deck was seen as such a necessary card because you would use it to go all in with your Death Shadow deck to see their hand, pay life, and then eventually double strike them with Teemer Battle Rage. What happened was the card was banned, and people were like, oh man, you're not going to be able to go all in anymore. The deck is going to have to just play fair magic. And then they realized that if the deck was in fact playing fair magic, instead of going for the Teemer Battle Rage, I kill you out of nowhere combo, but just I play all the good cards and I don't need to know your hand and I don't need Gitaxian Probe. The deck was just better. And it was like a Grixis Jund with just cheaper cards, basically. And yeah, that's how Grixis Death Shadow was born.
It ends up that the infect version of the deck, which is what was built originally, which is like, you know, I try making this one creature that's a 10-10 that can double strike someone to death. And I use Gitaxian Probe and Street Wraith and other things that kind of just like draw cards and get down to a low enough health total where I can kill someone out of the blue. It was not as good as just playing Thoughtseize. And like basically you got the power level of the Grixis cards you needed from counter magic to card filtering to all the things you want from blue. You get all the black stuff, you get all the red stuff, you get like kind of, you basically are making a Jund tempo deck that instead of needing to play green for Tarmogoyf, if you just got to play Death Shadow and at one point before Lurrus was seeing play or printed, you would play it with stuff like Tassigur and Gurmag Angler. But the world has changed since then, for better or for worse, and so it's one of like the famous examples of like a deck that was extraordinarily powerful in the metagame, like existing, but then because just people hadn't figured out the right thing yet, weren't playing it. Like, you know, this is kind of similar to like Amulet Titan. You know, Amulet Titan was a deck in the format for like a year and a half before it started seeing play, but it didn't actually start getting traction until, like, just like someone figured it out and the right pro played at the right tournament. Lantern Control is another example of that.
Yes, exactly. And it's I think one of the things that's most fascinating about what we're talking about is that basically there's this group mind idea that we all know what's best in Magic because so many of us are trying to figure it out all together. And so we all spend time working on it and posting lists. And it's kind of, okay, I got a better idea because I love Commander now. I play it with you a fair amount. And when I want to build a Commander deck, I will sometimes look up online and be like, oh, can I find a good list of this Commander for ideas and inspiration? And there's always this fear I have, which is that if I find somebody doing something cool that's the most popular list, that probably it's going to be playing all of the most synergistic cards that are the coolest, and any idea that I had, then I won't feel like I can take credit for any longer. Mm-hmm. But I often find that those ideas, they just give me other ideas and I end up with my own list doing its own thing different than the one I found. And it doesn't matter how close to that list I want to play. Those ideas will inevitably just give me ideas of my own. It's the same thing when it comes to any metagame, which is like, oh, well, the best version of the deck is this. And it's like somebody one day had to be like, I'm going to try playing Dress Down and it's going to be good because I can play it repeatedly and loop it with Lurrus. And that's a weirdly underpowered card, but it's just good in a lot of situations against a lot of decks. And I can play it over and over again, and it sacrifices itself It's just really good. And then somebody else was like, oh, that's a clever sideboard card. Wait, actually, that's just really good in the main deck. That's just a good card.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's one of those cards that, like, this has a bunch of weird, cool situational power level things with it that is bonkers with Death Shadow, right? It just turns Death Shadow into a 13-13 by being in play. And so it's one of those, like in, you know, in the Geist deck, I have Sundial of the Infinite, and that's a card that combos with some things in a cool way. And when I draw them together, that's great. But the fact that it also combos with my main game plan of just Geist of St. Traft, I get to keep the Angel at the end of turn. I get to play with it in the deck. And then I get the cool Thawing Glaciers or, you know, other like small blink effect removal features to it that are cool as well. And in this example, that's the point, right? Like, because Dress Down works so well with Death Shadow, and you're able to get like a, you know, on turn two, 13-13 and draw a card off of it, you get to play Dress Down, which then is a good answer to a ton of different cards that exist, from Primeval Titans to, or what, you know, whatever you need to kind of shut down on turns. And so it like is this cute little perfect, you like want to take synergistic, you like synergistic cards that are then valuable past that synergy are the perfect type of card, and Dress Down's a great example of that.
Well, I mean, can you even play in this version of the deck, how often can you even really play Death Shadow on turn one without it just dying? In this version of the deck,
sure, I'm not sure you turn, can. It's a turn, so you need to get Death Shadow alive, and then
yeah, because I fair. without, I mean, you can. It is possible in this version of the deck. It is possible because this version of the deck does.
You'd have to.
Oh no, this version doesn't even play Street Wraith. Wow, that's
no,
crazy.
No. They're not even playing Street Wraith anymore because you can't. Because Luris, you can't play Street Wraith with Luris.
Right. Yeah. So then you can't get a turn one Death Shadow. I don't think.
Yeah, you want to turn. Deck. You turn one Thoughtseize Fetch painfully, so you take 15, and then on the next turn you fetch again, so you can get a turn three Dress Down play
for sure. Yeah,
so 13-13 on turn three, yeah, is good.
Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about this deck. We're going to break down the format a bit. There's a couple things going on in Modern right now that I think are important for us to address. One of the big conversations online has been this whole discussion about the creatures that are getting played in the Modern format, and you can see it reflected in these decks from the top 32. But it's a lot of recent creatures. It's a ton of recent creatures. And we've talked about this for,
like, in this tournament, in the top 10 most played cards, the only cards that are not from Modern Horizons 1 onwards are Lightning Bolt, Engineered Explosives, and Mishra's Bauble.
We've talked about it for years, but the design cycle being 2 years behind with Magic is really interesting, especially when it comes to an internal format like Modern. You know, they design and certain things get pushed in one direction or another. You know, you've seen creatures get pushed over the years, spells get powered down, but that's not really the case when it comes to direct to Modern cards. It's mm-hmm. they do it, but they don't do it with the same, like, that balance is not nearly as carefully monitored, because with Standard, you're having to play this really careful balancing act for new players to be able to get in and buy Standard packs. You can't just drastically do something crazy in one set and then just something completely different in the next set, like a 4/4 for 4 at rare. And then the next set, you like, oh, the best that we're going to be able to do is a 2/3 for 4. And that's the best rate. Like, it doesn't make any sense. You sure. kind of have to go with the flow. Whereas with stuff that gets printed directly into Modern, they can be like, yeah, I mean, this seems cool. I think the format's powerful enough for this. Let's go for it. And mm-hmm. I think what's happened is the combination of that power creep that we saw out of creatures a couple years back now in Standard, we saw, you know, creatures like Uro, that carried over into the aggressive power level of the cards being printed directly into Modern. And that's what you see here. That's how you have the winning deck, the top deck, plays 4 copies of Dragon Rage Channeler, 4 copy of Raghavan. I mean, they're 2 of the best creatures ever printed in the history of Magic. They were printed in the last year. They're just, sure. it resembles an updated version of what you would have seen in an old, like, blue-red Delver deck. Like, that's kind of what you feel like you're looking at. But when you realize the power level difference between a creature like Delver and Nimble Mongoose compared to a creature like Raghavan and Dragon Rage Channeler, it's like you're playing with, like, the varsity team versus professionals. That's the difference in quality.
Sure.
Like, Nimble Mongoose was like the premier one drop in tempo decks in Legacy, mind you, for years. An untargetable 1/1 that becomes a 3/3 if you have 7 cards in your graveyard. So basically, like, a 1-mana untargetable 3/3.
Mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm.
For the same thing, it may be targetable, but you have a card that filters the top of your deck, grows, and is evasive for 1 mana. Does all the things. And the other card that you have accelerates you, draws you cards, and gets you 2 power on turn one, and you don't need anything in your graveyard. Right. Like, it's and they're both brand new creatures. I mean, Death Shadow, weirdly enough, and in the most hilarious way, is the namesake of the deck, and it's the least powerful of those three creatures.
Sure, yes. It does like benefit from the strategy in a way that's unique, but yes, it's like how far we've come that Death Shadow is the third best creature of these four.
Crazy. It's really insane. So there was a lot of Death Shadow Grixis decks. Literally the top four finishing decks were all Grixis Shadow. And look, I've been playing Modern on Sundays periodically on the channel and, you know, building out decks. I can tell you that having looked at the results recently of Modern tournaments, this has not been the case for 3 months. It has not. This is a newer development. It was this tournament, this particular weekend. It's a recent development that this is the deck du jour. It's been a good deck for a while. Cool. Right now, it's well-placed.
And there's interesting features, right? There's no hammer time in this entire top 32.
Yep. So everybody was going for it.
There's the decks that are most the cool, probably the coolest thing from this top eight that we haven't really touched on. It's not in the top eight. It's as soon as you drop out of the top eight and you get into like the wider format itself, it's the blue, black, red, green, the not white living
end deck.
The like living end deck who's gotten a lot of power level pushes from Kamigawa. The new Kamigawa set with the fact that it's playing Besiju, it's playing Otara, the Soaring City. But more importantly, it's playing two Colossal Sky Turtles. And yep. I think that's the big addition to the deck that's pushed it towards these colors. This deck was strong enough and popular enough and kind of the big secret sauce from the tournament that it was in the top creature conversation before this tournament and leading up to it as it was going on. The whole conversation, as you mentioned, was like in the top 10 creatures in the format, 9 of them were printed or 100% of them were printed in the last since basically Eldraine, right? And
yeah,
but in this tournament, that's not true. You have all of the cards from this one deck. You have Striped Riverwinder, you have Street Wraith, you have Curator of Mysteries, you have Charless Agent, which is debatably added because of, you know, Modern Horizons. You have Waker of the Waves. And I guess Waker of the Waves was 2021. But
what I was going to say is, I think what's cool about what you're saying here, and I think what's really interesting, is that it's a combination of new and old stuff. I mean, it's not, you know, this deck is not full of stuff from way back when. I mean, sure, Architects of Will, that's an older card. Mm-hmm. Street Wraith is an older card. But I mean, you know, Waker of Waves is a card that was printed in the last 2 years. You know, Colossal Sky Turtle is a newer creature. Titanoth Rex, that's a newer creature. And they're not overpowered creatures. They're just cool creatures that fit into the strategy nicely and put this deck into a place where it gets to be more competitive, which I think is really cool. Waker of Waves is one of my favorite cards printed for Living End in quite a while. I love
Waker of Waves so much. It's like one of my favorite artisan staples. It's like really good.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big creature that also is card selection. If you need it early, like, come on.
Yeah, I mean, and this is a deck that's definitely benefiting from Modern Horizons cards, right? It has Grief in it. It's playing Shardless Agent, but it's playing Force of Negation. But like, it is this own cool version of a Living End deck, and it's something different because it's only playing red for Violent Outburst. Like, the rest of this deck is just castable cards that you're just trying to get to that one. That or Shardless Agent are your only cascade triggers, right? Like, otherwise, it's just it would not be playing red if it wasn't for the fact that it needed a second cascade spell in these colors, and that ends up being Violent Outburst.
Yeah, pretty interesting. Definitely one of the cooler decks we got to see played over the weekend. And
let's see, it was 1, 2, 3, 4. Four of the decks in the top 32 were that. Another deck that was really, really kind of like really presented was Mono Green Tron.
Was it? Oh, it was Mono Green Tron. Okay.
Yeah, all these Mono Green decks are Tron.
Oh, gotcha. It's like it's a mix.
It's Tron and Mono Green amulet type.
When I looked at the lists, I didn't even realize that they were Tron decks. It totally makes sense that they would be Tron decks. There's no confusion there on my part now that I look a little closer. I just thought they looked like Modern Green Azusa decks to me. But yeah, you're absolutely right.
Both are represented, right? In the top eight, there were two green Azusa decks. Like, those are the ones that did the best by the end of the tournament. But if you drop down past it, there are one, two, three, four, five, six different decks, and about half of them are Tron decks. And so, like, the big ramp decks, it's not surprising that the Tron decks did badly once you got to the top 32 because their matchup against Grixis Death Shadow is bad, right? Like you're like they're playing one drops and that are like and then countering spelling or preventing your big spells from doing anything and killing you with the tempo to stop you, versus the Amulet Titan decks who did better in those matchups, though they did lose in the top eight, where you're playing a much more explosive game plan, right? And that's kind of what you need to be able to beat tempo decks often, is out tempo them with explosiveness.
I look at this and I have one response and one response only, because you look at the fifth place deck, the white red deck that is playing a bunch of good red creatures and Lurrus. Lurrus is the problem. Lurrus is absolutely the problem. I like don't think that getting rid of one of, you know, Channeler or Raghavan or Mishra's Bauble or something like that is going to make it any better. I think like I just think Lurrus is a problem. I think Companion as a general mechanic was a problem. We know this. We've talked about it at length. I just don't see like the power level of these top four decks, top five decks. They become good. They just become good decks that are competitive, mm-hmm. that are not like they don't have cheap cards mixed with inevitability when you don't have a companion like that. And the companion just adds this extra angle of like, yeah, I'll just exhaust all the things early and maybe kill you. And then if I don't, I'll just get this companion in my hand and play it. And now I have like a trump card that's going to get me all the value back because I'm playing lots of good cards.
Yeah.
And without that, they're just normally good cards.
I don't see how you look at this tournament and say like, yeah, Lurrus is fine.
Yeah, totally. It's the thing that stands out to me above all else here. I think there's a lot of fun stuff. I think there's a lot of good cards. I have no problems with there being a lot of recent cards in here. Like I think Horizons 2 is fine. I like Raghavan. I like Channeler. I like playing with those cards. I'm fine playing against those cards. None of them feel like they ruin Magic for me. Lurrus makes me feel like if I drew better than you and I have an advantage, but I don't close out the game and I don't have something that can compete with it, you will just put it into your hand, claw back in, and mm-hmm. I will. And it's like Magic's not supposed to be played that way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do think there's like a lot of cool stuff going on in this tournament once you leave that Grixis moment, though, right? Like there is like the Indomitable Cruelty decks are so sick. The fact that there's like, you know, people trying to basically do what was Polymorph decks, but now they get to actually play with good cards and they get Emrakul and Sarah's Emissary out here with a bunch of Planeswalkers and you're able to create a really cool game plan. Like that's really cool to me. The fact that you now have a cool white blue version of Hammer Time, right? Using now playing Reality Chip as it's just for that extra card draw and being able to tutor for a creature.
One of my favorite new cards. God, Kamigawa was so sick. It is a little weird that there's like not that many Kamigawa guards in here.
Well, I think some of that is availability because this is on Modo, right?
Sure.
So you're dealing with a like there's like, for instance, like, you know, the Kappa, which is in the Commander product, but it's like a legacy vintage staple, is like $100+ on Modo or 100+ tickets because it's like only openable in chests.
Got it.
So like enough people have to play enough tournaments to make that card available to be able to play legacy and vintage with it. So like card availability still matters more in this type of tournament where it was like on release day that like you're still going to have some. I will say I will agree with you, though, that there is not nearly as much Biseiju.
Yeah, the green decks are all playing. The green decks are pretty much all playing Biseiju.
Almost none of the Grixis decks are playing the spell lands. And part of that is just they've always played with such low land counts, right? Because they like
need two lands
to play. But you would think that would like allow the situation, them to solve that.
I was going to say that's the situation when you and I talked last week about it, about how what's the downside? Why wouldn't you? And the answer to that question is that the tighter of a format you get, the more high powered and the more refined the deck list is, the more and more it becomes, I can't play with a mono colored untapped source on turn one. If my deck has to not hit a single, like it just can't, I can't do that. Right. My deck doesn't function as well if I draw this as the land half.
Yeah.
And if I'm not intending to draw this as the land half, then I have to play a different, more powerful card because it's not a powerful enough card.
And I do think like the Hammer Time decks were significantly less present because I think a lot of people are expecting Biseiju Amulet Titan decks to be everywhere. Like Amulet Titan being able to tutor for an artifact, land, and enchantment removal spell really makes those decks like less appealing to me. one of the other decks that was playing a lot of Biseiju as well that did well this weekend was the Yawgmoth decks, the Yawgmoth combo decks. That deck continues to just be the new version of, you know, Collected Company, Birthing Pod combo.
Right.
Basically, Court of Calling decks. Really, if we're really honest, every deck, including the Birthing Pod decks, have all been Court of Calling decks. And the most recent version is these Yawgmoth Value Engine ones. And this continued to do well, got one in the top eight. let me see, where's the whole list? I got one in the top eight. I have one, two, three copies of it in the total tournament. There was another combo based green deck with a Walking Ballista deck, green white.
I saw that
company.
Yep.
got 15th place, and then I think this white black green deck is also, and then yeah, and then there's they're calling it white black green because it's playing one to Kali Honor Guard in the sideboard, but that's sure. another black green list that's, you know, in that Yawgmoth world. So it definitely got like, yeah, four of the spots in the tournament. If you include the white green one, it got five, and so that's like another cool one. But you see like almost no control. That's something that's almost totally void. The control decks are much closer to the Grixis Death Shadow lists.
I was going to say that, yeah. This resembles a little bit more of what Modern used to be like back when control didn't exist, when you pretty much had combo, aggro, mid-range. And the closest thing to control decks were kind of mid-range decks. I mean, blue-white was always a fringe deck for years, and then it got really popular a few years ago, and then blue white control became a real deck for a really long time, for quite a few years there, with the unbanning of Jace combined with Teferi being printed, combined with 3-mana Teferi being printed. All those things together made blue white control like a real player. I think it still is a player. I just think it's not represented here. But interestingly enough, the more powerful blue white representation are the blue white Hammer Time decks, and those decks are playing Lion Sash, which, by the way, was one of the cards we were excited about. It's cool to see. It's not surprising at all, but it's cool to see that it's in there.
And like the way that these are currently uploaded is like not done by a tournament reporting system, so the decks aren't as established as what they could be. But for instance, there is like a Jeskai list that plays more like the control. And this is like this honestly just reminds me of the old Sun and Moon decks, but splashing blue. But it's a counter cat deck. So it's like a Kahira in the sideboard, Felidar Guardian, Saheeli Ray, blue, white, red, Chalice of the Void, Blood Moon deck. That's playing Solitudes and Furies with Ephemerates. Like, this list looks sweet, and this is kind of like the control deck I expected to see more of, and then them finally figuring out that there is the combo in with Saheeli and Countercat, and how Felidar Guardian is so good with a Fury or a Solitude that's been able to be stabilized onto the board is sweet. And the fact that Kahira gets to hang out with Felidar Guardian the deck because it counts cats.
Yeah, that's sick.
is dope. I like really like that deck a lot. Funny, like, but it's being listed as a blue, white, red, green deck because it has Gaia's Blessing in the sideboard to prevent itself from getting milled out. Like, you bring this in and like, again, probably against the mill thing.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the mill deck
game plan is like a sideboard against that, which just means that it's a bad matchup for them, which makes sense, especially because you don't want your combo to be milled out.
I've played the mill deck a few times lately. It's really good. It's really good. It's really, really consistent. It's like shocking how good that deck is.
You're just not in the top eight. The white red decks are still kind of, you know, that definitely seems to be the burn, though. There's also another white red. This is closer to like almost Gigantha Storm. This deck is so sweet. I didn't see this the first time. There's a white red Gigantha Underworld Breach Mana Morpho Storm deck.
Oh, sick. Okay, yeah, I'm seeing this now. Yeah, this is doing it. It's playing Bergie. Yeah.
Lava Dart, Lightning Bolt, Desperate Ritual, Grape Shot, Manamorphose, Mishra's Bauble, Underworld Breach, Blood Moon, Gigantha. This list is so tight. This is from Heir of Elendil.
I mean, what's cool about this too, though, and I think this is
about 16th place.
Interesting. It is playing the red. It is playing the red Kamigawa land. I mean, this is an example of a blue red, or I'm sorry, of a red deck playing Channeler and Raghavan, not playing, not playing Lurrus. So those cards are going to continue to be good and powerful no matter what. Though it is playing a companion. So, but yes, I mean, I think what, like, I guess that's my next question for you, right? So you look at the format, you look at this tournament, and you get a pretty good sense of what's out there and what people are doing. Mm-hmm. Let's say they ban Lurrus. Like, I don't know. There's certain magic tides that are coming in that I feel like are fairly obvious. And I think it's a pretty sure thing that Lurrus will get banned.
It's likely. So I guess like one of the conversations is what decks do I think are going to be good after that? I think that all of the decks that play companions that aren't Lurrus decks like get a huge shot on the arm. All of the like Yorion decks, all the Kahira decks, all of the Gigantha decks all just become like way better. And I think Gigantha, and I think even Obosh and Gigantha start being looked at. I think like Grixis Death Shadow probably maybe starts playing Obosh. They try and figure out how to get into one and three drops versus cutting and instead of using the two drops to kind of accomplish what their game plan is, which I know that deck is out there. I think the Yawgmoth deck and gets a huge, huge bump. Living End, I think it's a bump. I think like there's a lot of decks in this metagame that aren't Lurrus decks. That's always the problem, right? It's just the problem. Oh, it's always the problem when like Wizards over the last few months was looking at it, because they would look at the format and be like, oh yeah, Lurrus is in like, you know, 50% of the deck, but it's currently letting eight different types of decks survive in really cool ways. Plus it's only 50%. The other 50% is a bunch of other different cards. But the fact that so many of these decks are companion decks, I think, is like the real issue to me. And the fact that Lurrus is doing what they're doing is an argument to be a problem. And it's cutting out the format diversity, right? Because Lurrus exists, Jund can't play Liliana of the Veil or Bloodbraid,
right,
or any other cool three drops and four drops. And so since you can't play them, their format's becoming much more homogenized around like the Dragon Channeler Raid Channelers and the Raghavan cards. Like by getting rid of Lurrus, you open up, because that's the one thing that's nice about the other companions, is the rest of them don't limit the format's diversity as much as Lurrus does.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lurrus is designed in this weird way, and you understand when they're designing those that you're going to get a Lurrus because they want to play to all different parts of Magic, and that's a very exciting, very cool part of Magic. Sure. Low CMC efficient cards, like, I love that stuff. So, you know, when I'm looking at the companions initially, it's not a question. Of course, Lurrus is the best one. But the problem with that is those types of cards, efficient one and two drops, are already the best cards in Magic. You're already encouraged to play them if they're well-designed, they're powerful, because they are cheaper. And when you play things that are cheaper and powerful in Magic, we know velocity ultimately will win you the game. Mm-hmm. So if you're already doing that, those cards are already good, and there is one companion that rewards you for playing those, you're ultimately just like, sure, I'll spike this. Why wouldn't I? It mm-hmm. makes no sense not to. Like, I get to play the game on turn one and two and then just have redundancy and just do that all game. And you, best case scenario, are going to be playing things in the middle of the game, but I'll probably still kill you. Like,
cuts out the fact that like some of the best answers, probably two, like the best answer to Lurrus or the best way to fight one is to play your own. The second best one is probably a three drop, right? It's like, it's cards that like you can outvalue your opponent. And that's true, right? Like, that's why the Yawgmoth decks are working. That's why Amulet Titan working. There's a reason to play non-Lurrus cards, but so much of the format is being homogenized around that one card that I think it would open it up more. And like the devil's advocate side of that, right, is that it doesn't, right? Like, by getting rid of Lurrus, you lose like the three cool decks that are playing Lurrus, be it, you know, the prowess decks or Burn or the like Hammer Time. And instead you just are like, Murktide Regent and Amulet Titan are the only two decks that are good, right? Like, it may be the Lurrus decks are like outvaluing things in a good way, but the library of cards that aren't able to see play right now in five of the main strategies of the format, I think, is a bigger hit to diversity than the styles of decks. If that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. I think it totally makes sense. Yeah, when I look at this top 32, I think Modern's in a pretty exciting place. I don't think Modern's in a broken place. I think Modern is in an unfortunate place in the sense that I don't really think we'll get very far outside of a format that looks just like this with Lurrus here. So when's our next opportunity for Lurrus to get banned?
There's no banning schedule, so they can ban it at any moment, anytime they look at it. So if they think it's a problem, they like will give a week announcement and then deal with it. Likely, it probably won't be... like, there's no emergency need to do it, but it'll be interesting when they choose. I think the thing to me that's like the grain of salt for this tournament is that Lurrus based Grixis Shadow is a deck that is very versatile in all of the different angles of attack it can attack and put pressure onto people, and is not very easy to be hated out. Graveyard Hate's not very good at it. Like, removal is good against it, but they have a lot of different ways to answer it. And now they have a lot of different threats that attack on different axes. So I think that in a kind of the way, like a lot of the time, Burn is a deck that just like wins a standard Pro Tour right after rotation. Like the number of burn decks that have top eighted in September Pro Tours is like massive because people don't know how to deal with it. They don't know which cards they should be playing to fight it off the best that they could. Like it's a, you know, it's a limiting, the format's so wide open and changing. And I think that's a little bit of what happened this tournament, right? Like not only was this tournament up in the air where like what's good and what has Kamigawa added to the format and what these powerful lanes and what do they do to the format? You also have the ability to then like fight them off. And like the Cascade deck was a big player in this, right? A lot of people did very well with the new Living End deck. And I think that the Grixis deck beats the Living End deck.
Are you at all confused, but surprised by the fact that of the Cascade decks, the Rhinos deck is not here at all? You have multiple versions of Living End.
I think that the power level of specifically Colossal Sky Turtle is the reason, right? Like Living End really wants to play with that card. The other cards in this deck, like it was missing, it was close already, right? That like even before Kamigawa came out, you would still see Living End like prop into the top 32 decks in the format. The Rhino deck was above it, and the Elemental deck was near it as well, but it wasn't always that far behind, right? It just was like just not as good as that one was. Now that you have like the versatility engine plus the redundancy of Colossal Sky Turtle, because Colossal Sky Turtle is a great removal spell, and it also lets you buy back your cast, you know, your Violent Outbursts when they counter your Living End the first time. It lets you kind of get around those issues. I think that was a big shot in the arm to this deck being successful now.
One of the two, you know, there's two lists here, and one of them is playing Colossal Sky Turtle. The other one's not. They ninth and 10th spot, respectively. One of them plays two copies of Sky Turtle. The other one doesn't. I was going to say, as far as Sky Turtle goes, I mean, removal spell, more of like a tempo spell, really. It's a tempo spell more than a removal spell, right? Because it's a bounce spell.
This is a removal spell to me.
Yeah. I still interaction. It's a piece of interaction. Sure.
Because like you use it and then the next turn you cascade and you have a 6/5 flying ward 2 enchantment creature in play.
Card's good. Yeah.
I think like there's an argument that this format like is weirdly benefited. I think there's like a portion of the metagame that is weak to cheat big thing into play. And Grixis Death Shadow is good against that. Like if you look at this metagame that we're looking at, there's like a lot of like big stuff goes boom. There's Indomitable. Yeah. There's the Living End deck. There's Indomitable Creativity decks. There's the Tron decks. There's the Amulet Titan decks. There's all of those decks, I think, are weak to, I have my one, I'm beating you down on turns 1 through 3. And while you're trying to deal with that, I'm going to counterspell your big mega play. And I think that's a little bit of the story here, is that the metagame itself, the fresh version of the metagame itself, was weak to Grixis Death Shadow opponents just knowing how to play their deck better than anyone else, basically playing Unchained list. Like that's the crazy thing, is like these lists did so well, and most of them aren't playing any Kamigawa cards. Most of them don't even have the lands in their mana bases, and it's just because I have this deck already, I'm just going to play it, and I know what I'm doing. And you, person who's playing the turtle deck, maybe didn't play enough of them. Maybe the fact that they only played two in one of the decks or didn't play in the other was the mistake. Maybe it's bad, and you're just playing with this clunky turtle that's not doing anything, while I'm, like, valuing you out with Roggevon and Lurrus.
Well, let me ask you this, because we're talking most played cards in the format right now. We have over here on the side of this column, we can talk about the most played creatures, most played spells. And you notice
in the tournament
that the most played card, period, end of story, in the tournament is Roggevon. And the most played creature, go ahead.
It's a little misleading, because I believe that counts based on like total copies per deck.
You mean right. Like it's the highest density? Like, so,
well, like I would be surprised if Lurrus isn't the most played card in the tournament.
Fair point. And I'm not saying I don't mean it to invalidate Lurrus. I realized that when I said this, because you're only gonna have a single copy of Lurrus. But let's take Lurrus out for a second.
Like, yeah,
I Lurrus think we all agree. Yeah. You and I agree. The audience probably agrees. Everybody who plays Magic right now agrees. Lurrus is, I think, an issue, and something will be done about that eventually, probably. Mm-hmm. But outside of Lurrus, the most played card in this tournament is Roggevon. And it needs to not be understated how oppressively good that card is, how expensive that card is, and the fact that it's debatable Like, I mean, you and I had a conversation last weekend about this, about Raghavan versus Chandler. And that's a conversation that I want to have on air with you right now. So the conversation was,
what's better? And comment, please comment below what you think. Is Raghavan or Dragon Rage Chandler better? And my statement
to you. So the conversation, before we get into it, the conversation started because I asked, on the all-time scale, what's the better creature, Raghavan or Deathrite Shaman? And you responded and said, well, I think Chandler is actually better than Raghavan, maybe. And that was where the conversation started going. Shaman,
but then I followed there. Yeah.
So we're talking about two different creatures printed in the same set for the same cost and the same color that we're comparing to probably arguably the best creature ever printed. The one mana Planeswalker, the most famous one drop creature probably ever in terms of power level now.
Yeah.
That's the level of power we're talking. So is Raghavan or is Dragon Rage Chandler better, more problematic? Go.
Well, okay. So the go to the Deathrite Shaman. Deathrite Shaman is better than Raghavan for sure. I think it's better than Dragon Rage Chandler. I'm not even thinking. I know it is. I think it's better than both. The weakness of Raghavan is its legendary status. It is not a drawback to be ignored. If I draw Raghavan as my second copy, it is so much worse than drawing a second copy of Deathrite Shaman or Dragon Rage Chandler by wide margins. And that is the argument for why Raghavan is worse than those two, is all three of them generate value in similar ways. Deathrite Shaman doesn't need you to attack. Deathrite Shaman fixes your mana. Like, I think Deathrite Shaman is better than both still, and it's because the ways to shut it down are literally, if you do not have a removal spell, this card will do its thing, versus Raghavan, which, like, an unanswered Raghavan is worse than an unanswered Deathrite Shaman. Like, if we're talking, like, I'm playing in a vacuum where I have all three cards available and I get to choose one of them in my opening hand, and my opponent won't do anything for four turns. Sure, I'll choose Raghavan.
But yeah, you get a card, you get mana. Sure.
But Deathrite Shaman gets me to turn, gets basically time walks me if I play it on turn one, and on turn eight gets me go, you know, gets a threat on board that's unblockable, right? You have to either have a removal spell or this is going to kill me or stabilize me. And Raghavan on turn one, if they have no creatures in the way, is great. But the moment they have a X1, Raghavan stops doing anything. And right. Or if they have a Raghavan in play already, the second Raghavan I drew is a discard spell. It, like, doesn't, you know, it isn't even castable at that point. So there is the, and then Dragon Rage Channeler has the same kind of thing, right? Like, if I draw my second Dragon Rage Channeler, now I have two. Like, and right. And if they're not attacking, they're still, every card I play, they're drawing me half a card, right?
Double maybe surveilling,
or depending on which match, which if I'm playing Lurrus, which I probably am. So, like, that's I think the reason, the fact that multiples are usable, the fact that any amount of them on a stalled board on the ground is going to still draw me cards every turn. And then the last piece of that information, which if it is stalled on the ground, they fly. So you have to have flying blockers to stop this creature versus Raghavan that gets blocked in. But when you're ahead, Raghavan is better. Dragon Rage Chandler and Deathrite. Dragon Rage Chandler is better behind and in situations where your person is in your way. And Deathrite Shaman is just good always. There is no, like, the only point Deathrite Shaman is bad is if you're both of your graveyard, like, rest in pieces in play. Which, fine, like, weird sideboard tech against the Planeswalker.
So it's interesting to say that your opinion is that Dragon Rage Chandler is the second best creature ever printed, is basically your opinion.
No, I think it's better than Raghavan.
One drop creature ever printed, then. I mean, what else would even be in the consideration for this? Birds of Paradise? One drop.
One drop. Birds of Paradise is not better than Dragon Rage Chandler or Raghavan.
Delver? Give me Delver.
No. Absolutely not. Llanowar Elf. Creature type matters.
Raging Goblin, maybe.
No, I think I'm fine with that. If we're saying it has to be a one-drop creature, I think the best... Mother of Ruins, I would say, is better than
both. Right, you get into that category.
Or like Goblin Welder. Like, if we're talking not in modern history, yes, I think it's the second best creature ever printed. Once you get into Legacy, you get into the Mother of Ruins world. I think Viscera Seer is up there too, like a dark horse candidate.
That's just.
I don't think it's better than Ragavan.
That's just a heavy bias. You just love that card.
No, I mean, like, it's a good card. I think like it's just unique in what it does. I think there is a few options in that category. Like if I'm making my top five modern one drops segment for the podcast, you go Deathrite Shaman at number one. I would put Dragon Rage Channeler at number two, Ragavan at number three, Noble Hierarch at number four. And Visceral Seer at number five.
Over Mom. You'd put modern.
And then and maybe Glistener Elf goes above Visceral Seer. Like it's like,
why
one
is
of
Giver
two.
Of Runes so much worse? Because it can't protect itself.
Correct.
Yeah.
Like by itself. That's colorless is cool, but it's not in the context of modern, the format where like every deck starts with four Prismatic Ending, four Lightning Bolt, four Fatal Push, or four Unholy Heat. It's like
it's got
exile, right? Like creatures that aren't good. Like it's hilarious how good creatures are in modern for how much removal spells are in the format. But I think that's a list I would go with.
Yeah, that's what I kind of figured. I think that it's really interesting to think about the format right now, and we're seeing that the number one and two most played creatures in the format are Ragavan and Dragon's Rage Channeler, right? So it's two of the three best one drop creatures ever printed right now are the most played creatures in modern.
Yeah, I will say in defense of Ragavan over Dragon Rage Channeler, I think Ragavan is better in a wider library of decks. I will give that. Fair. Like Dragon Rage Channeler requires you to have a deck built around making Dragon Rage Channeler work. Well, you can just play Ragavan in any red deck. And that like if someone wants to argue against me, that's the best argument is that like my deck does not need to be built around Dragon Rage Channeler if I'm playing Ragavan. I could put it in a Naya Stompy deck. I can put him in a tempo deck. I can put him in a control deck. To be honest, I can put him in, like, as long as my deck is fine having a creature, so not Indomitable Creativity, or like a Cascade deck, then Ragavan can be in it.
Do you know what the funniest third thing to talk about creature-wise is? And this is hilarious, because if you've played enough Modern, then you know this. The third most played creature is Endurance. And when we all talked about the best incarnations, it's amazing how wrong people were. Not like it's not even because they were wrong. It's metagame dependent. It's like it's the fact that really all five of them, I think, are amazing. There's only one really that people look down on. And it's the blue one. I'd say that's the only one that is really looked at as like, and it has its place because it kind of counteracts the other ones in some ways. But like it's funny to me that Fury and Endurance have had such a place in the sun lately. And like Grief was like the hype one. Grief was the hot one. When these got spoiled, Grief was the card. Like Grief was like everybody was talking about like, you know, ephemerating your grief on turn one. And Solitude was like the pretty clear number two. Solitude feels like it's the most accurately predicted of all of them.
I think Solitude is number one. For the record, like Endurance is seeing more play, and it saw more play in this tournament with a format that's like heavily made out of decks that want it in your sideboard to protect your graveyard because you're playing a Street Wraith deck, or you're playing a Living End deck that wants to recycle your Living Ends into your deck, right? Like, I think like Endurance is a better sideboard card, but like that always sucks. I like when you talk about the best cards in a format, and then someone's like, "Well, Blood Moon sees more play in the sideboard, or you know, or Chalice of the Void is the best artifact in the format because it's in every sideboard or whatever, or you know, it's like kind of like, okay, yeah, fine, it is seeing more play as far as copies in the top 32, but the decks aren't, it's not pushing decks through tournaments the way that I'm like Solitude does, right? Like Solitude is in the main decks of decks, and decks are being built around abusing it, and it's seeing play in every game that it's in there versus, you know, 20% of games Endurance is in the matchup and is super powerful there, and decks want to always have it available for that, but most games they're playing don't see an Endurance cast.
Well, the other thing that's hilarious to me also in the same breath is that the only force that is played in the top 10 spells is the green force of Vigor, which now that 2 years or 3 years has passed, I think we can kind of all look at each other and agree like maybe it's 1A, 1B, but it's not like you have Force of Negation and the other ones like it felt for a minute. It's really like Force of Vigor might be better than Force of Negation, but they're pretty damn close. They're like equally valuable to have. Like Counterspell's on here and Force of Negation's not.
Right. I think there's, that makes sense to me, right? That Force of Vigor... metagame dependent is just more powerful. It's a similar situation too, though, right? Where a lot of those are in sideboards. but it's such a blowout against specifically Urza Saga.
Yep.
And Amulet decks, and even stuff like the Grixis Shadows decks, that like it's hard for me to be surprised that it's so powerful. And it's, I think it being so played is one of the reasons that Hammer Time did so badly.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, it's really good against Hammer Time decks. It's really good against a lot of decks, though, to be completely honest. Like Force of Vigor is just an enormous blowout against like a number of different decks.
Anyone's playing Urza Saga, right? Like that's the real, which like it's hard with the most played cards list because it doesn't include lands. And I don't think you get how many Urza Sagas are seeing play. But the fact that like Mishra's Bauble is the second most played spell in the format, I think is a points towards that's how many Urza Saga decks there are. It's like Raghavan, Expressive Iteration, and Mishra's Bauble. That's a big one that we haven't talked a lot, but like Expressive Iteration being in 34% of decks in the top 32 is an insane statistic as well.
It's right? Wild too, because when you compare Expressive Iteration to similar cards, the cards that it compares to over the years, right? Like it's kind of wild how this version of the card is the one. Like the difference between Expressive Iteration and Telling Time, for instance, is like, you know, obviously Iteration is a better card. Like there's nobody's doubting that. But on the surface, with Telling Time being an instant and only costing blue one, the difference between the two cards does not seem on the surface like it's that drastic. But when you play them, they could not feel more different. Expressive Iteration feels like it's a, you know, it's a real like card advantage card, whereas the other one just feels like a cheap card selection spell. And it's the templating of this card and the specific word choices that they use that really makes the difference, because you may play the exiled card this turn as the first piece of it that's so necessary, right? Because it means you can play a land off of it. This card is very, very, very good. I've played it a lot now, and I'm surprised, because it compares to so many similar card selection cards over the years, how much better this version is.
Agreed. Now, you know, we're getting closer to wrapping up, and I do want to ask, and then have my own thoughts. Do you think a card needs to be banned? Do we think, like, if you were in charge of Wizards, would you just make your announcement Monday that in a week Monday you're going to be coming out with a ban announcement in Modern and then ban Lurrus? Or do you wait to see how Kamigawa affects the format? Because this is a first day set for, you know, first week of the set being out there, based metagame shift.
My answer to the question is yes, you ban something, and the thing you ban is Lurrus. And the reason you do it is very specific. Magic, you know, has now been around for more than 25 years. You know, we're 30, going on 30 years pretty soon. And the sort of confines of the game design are fairly simple. I mean, there are certain things, truths that have been there since the entire history of the game, right? You introduce new stuff and new card types, whether it's a planeswalker or a vehicle or things like that, you know, the London Mulligan, whatever. These are all things that you can try that sort of update the game. But one of the fundamental truths of Magic for the longest time is you don't get to start the game in a 1v1 format with an extra card that you can play every game. Now, Companions changed this, and we know they were a problem when they were printed. We talked about this when they were first previewed. Lurrus being the problem that it is not something that can be fixed by new cards from a new format. If those cards are powerful and they're designed in the same way as other cards, Lurrus will just make those cards more powerful. You would have to design a card that just said, you can't play Lurrus anymore, this costs zero, and I get it in every game or something. It would have to be some silly thing that would never happen. For that reason, I think Lurrus has to go, because we've now seen the evidence has been proven to us over time that this is an issue. There's nothing that a new set of cards from a standard format, or even really from a like modern format, like a Modern Horizons 3 is going to do, that can change Lurrus. Now, is that a problem with all companions? Probably. Is Lurrus the one that I think is most guilty and the most powerfully problematic? Definitely. And I think that if you have to make that decision, it's Lurrus that's got to go above all else, because it's the only one of the problem cards that just changes the rules of Magic. We never had that before.
I think like Gigantha doesn't create unfun game states to have it in the companion zone. Like sometimes decks will have it as a freebie. Cool. Here's your 5 mana 5 or 4/4 or whatever its power and toughness is, but that like kind of ramps you, whatever. And like it'll make things like a little less fun, because sometimes people won't play like the blue pip thing. They'll only play, you know, like they'll like make small choices like that. I think you can print 1,000 different possible control creatures that will make it so Kahira doesn't see play in the control lists. Like I think like they're getting to do it now, and it's making like Okihira is probably better than Snapcaster Mage, but that's probably not always true. And the moment they print an instant that's better than Prismatic Ending, or like make an instant spell that makes it worth playing Snapcaster Mages, I think Snap comes back. Or they print another creature that's just not an elemental cat, nightmare, beast. Right? Those are the four things. And you know, I think that like Obosh, honestly, in the Companion Stone is dope. I think that's a real cost, not playing two drops in Modern. I think that, and then the other ones aren't really seeing play right now. So like Lurrus is the only one to me that does create really, really, really specific like deck building constraints in a way that is a net negative for the format and is extraordinarily powerful and recursive. And
I like, do think
creates,
there's
creates the same game state every single time. Giganta is a big creature that might ramp you to your 10 drop if you have a 10 drop. Lurrus makes the gameplay of every single deck that's playing it exactly the same.
I think there's concern that if Lurrus was to get banned, you would see decks shift towards what's the most powerful thing I can do that includes a companion. And maybe that's a problem or maybe not. I know that the idea of having a companion and the inevitability of having a companion is one of the issues. It's not just Lurrus's power level. It's the idea that you play a fair game of Magic against someone. And if you guys are going tit for tat, round for round, one for one, at a certain point, when you are resource trading, you are guaranteed a resource with an extraordinarily low startup cost. If control decks lean into your end because they have an extra card or something like that. And that's the only place I could see like just companions in general.
Yorion's gameplay is different every time. You have to have like Yorion forces your decks to be less consistent every game. Like the Lurrus problem to me from a gameplay perspective is it creates extremely repetitive gameplay, right? Every turn with Lurrus in play, not between decks, but every turn, if I have a Lurrus in play, my turns basically are now I do the exact same one thing every turn. I now have like an extra step every turn I have to do every time. With Yorion, I play my big blinky thing. Yes, I want to play with permanence that can benefit from it, but I could have an elemental deck. I could have a like a creature based deck. I could have a planeswalker deck. I can have a control deck. I can have an aggro deck. Like the library of different things I can do with Yorion is so much wider from a gameplay perspective. That it's fun and you can include anything in your deck. It's not like Lurrus where it's like L3 drops that would be good in grindy decks are no longer legal in Modern, which is currently what we're playing. Unless you're Murktide Regent. Murktide Regent is like the one weird exception to that rule, but you have to be that power level to be able to make it so you don't play Lurrus.
Right. I would agree. So I think the answer is yes. I think it sounds like we kind of agree. Lurrus has got to go.
I think that Lurrus should be banned. I think Lurrus should be banned in 2 months.
Oh, you want to like let the format breathe.
I think we need at least a month of letting Kamigawa like do its thing, because I think that there are cool cards in it. The one thing I will say is I don't think there's a lot of cards in Kamigawa that are like good against Lurrus decks. Like the most powerful stuff, if anything, is like good with Lurrus, other than maybe artifact enchantment destruction lands. But even then, I think the one thing is like I think Amulet Titan is good against Lurrus. I think like classically those two decks are opposed, and I think the most powerful effects from Kamigawa are effects that make Amulet and Titan decks that make Amulet Titan decks more powerful. And with that in mind, I'm really looking at a format that could maybe fight against Lurrus. But is like Lurrus decks versus Amulet and Titan decks the best format that I want to play in? I don't know.
So yeah, it's very hard to know. It is funny to me that we freak out so much about a 3-drop that you have to pay to 3 get again in your hand, then cast it, that can just be removed. Like, it is funny to me that that's like all it is, right? It's like this extraordinary amount of work. But I mean, just the value you get of going through all of that one time, you get one bobble back, a single extra draw. And then if they have to burn a spell on it, now you've traded your card for their spell and you've gotten back your bobble one time.
Yeah, it's a guaranteed 6-mana discard draw card, worst version of the spell. And that's
right.
And also like part of the play, like interestingly enough, the play pattern of the new version of companions where you have to pay 3 mana means that they're like better against removal, because my deck is built to get to the point where Lurrus comes down and my opponent is top decking alongside me. Like it's the Jund game plan, right? So it's like, it's more like I get to top deck a Liliana of the Veil, no guaranteed on turn 6.
For sure. Yeah.
And like against a lot of decks, that's just would, I would win. I like Jund would win every one of those matchups. And it's like reverse Liliana's, instead of each of us discarding a card and me getting to play a card. So it's at parity, or forcing you to play a card every turn, I get to draw two cards a turn. So it's
right.
So I'm not surprised this card is very strong, but we'll see if it survives.
For sure. So I think that wraps up kind of our metagame breakdown of what's going on in Modern. It's definitely cool to see a big tournament with a lot of hot decks going on. It feels like we're getting closer and closer and closer to there being more in-person Magic happening sooner than later. Fingers crossed, that continues to be the trend. Definitely looking forward to playing some in-person Magic at a large event when I get the chance. And
I am super hyped. I think Modern is in a very, like, yes, the top eight looks really scary, but when you drop down, the amount of really cool decks we got to talk about tonight is sweet. I think the fact that you can do all of those cool things in Modern is really, really cool, and I'm excited to see where the metagame goes to. And that's kind of why I want to wait to ban anything, because I think that there's a lot of cool stuff going on. And the fact that, like, the best four players happen to be best, like Grixis control, Grixis Death Shadow players who have had the last 6 months to get good at their deck, did good in a format of a bunch of people trying out new stuff, isn't super surprising to me, and also shouldn't be the thing that we're like, oh no, we need to ban cards, because it's like people are learning it. But we'll see where it goes, and I'm totally fine if in 3 weeks of Modern challenges, just Grixis control continues to be the best deck in the format to an unhealthy percentage, and like Hammer Time just disappears, is like, okay, Lurrus needs to go. Like, yeah. Honestly, yeah. Hammer Time has almost been saving Lurrus to me this whole time. The fact that, like, this dumb equipment deck is the best deck in the format because it has a cool draw engine, like, that's a cool thing that Lurrus was doing. And if the metagame decided that that's no longer good, then I definitely think there's no reason to keep Lurrus around.
I mean, the non Nettlesist version of Hammer Time plays Lurrus, so just for the record.
No. I'm saying that's a Lurrus deck that is cool, right? Like Lurrus being.
Oh yeah.
Like yes, I think the deck becomes a Nettlesist deck, right? It transfers to that version if they ban Lurrus. But the fact that Lurrus was allowing Hammer Time, which is a weird aggro equipment deck, like Affinity meets Infect almost, to be the best deck in the format is fine. I think that's the best deck in the format is a healthy place for Modern to be. But if because of the new lands and people just realizing that Force of Vigor is good, that Hammer Time is no longer in the top five decks in the format or in the top two,
then you're worried about it, I get you.
Then Lurrus becomes a lot more problematic to me because it's now no longer really enabling fun decks that are doing cool stuff. It's just enabling Grixis Control, which, like, I love Grixis Control as a Kess aficionado / control player. Like, I'm here for it, but I also don't think it should be the best deck in the format by, like, in the type of way it dominated this tournament.
Yes, I would agree. I think that's fair.
That's my mic drop. Thank you again, listeners. Also, make sure to check out Ultra Pro Products. They also are one of the cool sponsors of this podcast, helping make it happen. I'm a big fan of these guys. They let me color code the decks that I have inside of them, the Satin Towers, and they have a bunch of really cool product coming out, like glitter versions of it and all the new playmats with all the Kamigawa characters, including all the like Japanese altar artwork stuff. So definitely check them out as well. Make sure to check out TikTok. Me and Ben, we've been posting. You want movie content? Follow Ben. You want magic content? Follow me. You want music content? Follow Ben. You want anime content? Follow me.
It's sweet. TikTok's the best. I am having a great time on there, so come interact.
At Ben Baton Media, at Kess Wiley on all platforms. Also, I did a whole episode on Shivan Bot's podcast. You can check it on YouTube or on his podcast app. We go over the whole toy industry and the Hasbro Wizards of the Coast merger thing that's happening. Definitely recommend checking that out if you want to hear me talk about like how the toy industry affects Magic the Gathering. That is the place to go. So check that out as well. And we will talk to all of y'all next week. Hit that subscribe button and the like button.
Hey guys.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.